Welcome back. It's season two of HugeCast. Like many of you, we're having to do things a little differently here at HugeCast HQ, which means we're recording our guests remotely instead of in our own studio, so you might notice a sound difference. But what hasn't changed is that we have some of the best guests to sit down and have a chat with us. Hold on to your hat, and welcome to HugeCast Season 2.
What's the name of this podcast?
Eugene Cast.
How am I supposed to pronounce that?
OIGcast.
A huge cast.
Huge cast.
You're
listening to HugeCast.
Hi, I'm Adam Wendt, and you are indeed listening to HugeCast. Today I'm speaking with Megan Schultz. Megan was the director of CASA Lane County for 15 years. She currently provides consulting services through her firm MSH Consulting, which stands for Make Stuff Happen. Megan is currently the community coordinator for 15th Night, a youth-informed community-wide partnership working to align existing resources in innovative ways to support students in K-12 who are homeless or at risk for homelessness. Welcome, Megan.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Hey, I got everything right on that, right?
First time.
It's almost like I had it written down.
It is almost like that.
So we're here talking, and one of the things that I wanted to speak with you a little bit about specifically was 15th Night, which is something that you've been working on for how many years?
Almost 6 years.
6 years. And can you tell us a little bit more about what 15th Night is currently doing and how it got started?
Absolutely. Well, I think one of the things many people ask me is, how did you get the name 15th Night? And 15th Night came from an observation made by Looking Glass Community Services, which is our community's largest homeless and runaway youth serving agency. Their observation was that a youth who is new to the street, so your first night out, mm-hmm. That we as a community have a very narrow window of time to intervene before that youth is more likely to experience chronic homelessness. And that's basically a 2-week period. That information was shared with our then Eugene City Manager, John Reese, mm-hmm. who said, you know, we need to figure out as a community, how do we ensure that youth would never have to choose to spend a 15th night on the street? So that's how the name 15th Night came to be. And that's really, really what the, you know, effort is all about is, you know, how do we as a community help ensure that, you know, students who are experiencing homelessness, who are kind of what I like to say, standing on the edge of the abyss mm-hmm. to the street, how do we help keep them from falling off that edge? And then if they do, how do we intervene quickly? And so really those are the, you know, kind of the two main focuses is how do we support those who are, you know, on the verge and ensure that they never get there? And then if they got there, how do we get them off quickly? Mm. So everything we do is really about those two things.
So what about those people who say, well, there are already systems in place out there to help kids whose parents are having issues or who are having issues at home or whatever. There's already services out there. Why replicate something that already exists?
Well, this isn't a replication. This is a different way of trying to solve the problem. And this problem is not meant to be solved by, you know, the city or the county or the state. It's not meant to be solved by a service provider or a small, you know, a group of people. It's really meant to be solved by all of us working together. But more importantly, I think the thing that's really different about the 15th Night is that you mentioned this at the beginning of your, you know, introduction, is that it is a youth-informed effort. And so systems and adults and experts have all tried to solve this problem, and we haven't been able to do it. Not that we haven't made great strides and helped save thousands of lives or help redirect thousands of lives, mm-hmm. but we haven't solved the problem. And so let's give the youth a chance to fix it, and let's support them to do it. You know, so let's listen to what they have to say are the problems and the answers or the solutions, and then let's figure out how to make those things happen or to resolve those things.
Right. So the idea that it starts that the 15th Night Project is something where youth have a role in helping to direct and assess the situation. Can you talk a little bit about how the group was formed, how the initial 15th Night core group was formed, and how the youth were involved in that?
Yeah, so what happened in our community is that John Reese gathered a couple of community leaders and what I like to call yes people, mm-hmm. you know, people that don't use the word no, like they don't know it. It's not mm-hmm. in their vocabulary. All they know is yes. Mm-hmm. And yes, in terms of solving problems and trying new things until we figure it out. So he really surrounded himself with a small core group of these yes people. Mm-hmm. And then the very next thing that group did was figure out how to put together a youth action council. So how do we recruit and then support youth who have dropped out of school and been on the streets, students who are currently homeless but still in school, and then students who just care about the issue but have not been homeless? How do we recruit them and then support them to do this kind of work? But more importantly, how do we listen to them? Mm-hmm. How do we listen to what they're telling us and have the courage to follow through on it, mm-hmm. and not just say, that's a silly idea or that's ridiculous? How do we do that? And so there was a lot of time at the very beginning of 15th Night of this, you know, yes team or core team of leaders listening and talking and just being with this Youth Action Council and building trust. And once that happened, then I like to say, then the magic happened.
Right.
Because then you had empowered youth who wanted to solve this problem, that were willing to be vulnerable and share their stories and their ideas. And then you had this group of leaders who are saying, okay, well, how do we make that happen then?
Right.
They want this to happen. How do we make that happen? And, you know, everything has right. happened from that kind of that place.
So that youth team, how many kids were on that, in that group initially?
I think originally we had about 12. Mm-hmm. Some of them 6 years later are still a part of the Youth Action Council. And our problem is that they're no longer really youth, right? Because they're graduated from high school. Some of them are, you know, graduated from college. Some of them have families already.
Wow.
And so right now we are in this dilemma of how do we have to keep our finger on the pulse of students, you know, that are currently in high school, that are experiencing this, and students who want to help, but also continue to empower this other group that's been doing the work for so long. So, you know, we're right. working with that group to figure out how to make that happen.
Right. So one of the things that I think a lot of folks don't know about 15th Night is that it became more publicly prominent in the work that was happening with your core group and with the youth action group when it was selected for the Hack for a Cause. which yes. is a local, I'm going to wander into trying to describe what Hack for a Cause is. It's a hackathon. But people come together and work on projects for nonprofit and community organizations and the public good.
Adam, it's much more fun than that.
Well, yeah.
It's actually a contest, right? And it's, you know, 48 hours, and they like drink a lot of Red Bull, and they stay up for like 2 days straight. And these brilliant minds like come together and trying to like solve a problem using technology. Yes, 15th Night was one of the first projects that the very first Hack for a Cause in our community took on. And so we are so thankful to have been a part of the Hack for a Cause from the very beginning.
So tell me a little bit about what came out of the Hack for a Cause and how it started to solidify the approach that 15th Night was starting to take in coordinating resources and whatnot.
Yeah, so the problem that we presented to the teams was we have a youth who needs to be connected to resources and services, and we have all these resources and services. So we have a network of organizations, providers who want to be able to provide resources and services to a student experiencing homelessness, but there's no easy way to do that. And we also know from talking with the youth that if I am brave enough to ask somebody for help and that person can't deliver, then I'm probably not going to ask again. And so we have one shot. We have one shot. And so if this student needs mental health services or shoes, we basically have one shot to get it right. And that was like the problem, right? That's the problem we presented to the Hack for a Cause. And the solution, what they came up with, was this system called the Rapid Access Network, and we call it the RAN for short. And it's a web-based system that uses a text message and an email. So if I'm a school counselor and I'm working with a student who needs mental health services and shoes, I can quickly log into the system and I can send what we call an alert to the network, this big network of providers, for those things, shoes and mental health services. The beauty of it is that it only goes to the organizations that provide those things. So if I'm a food provider or a employment provider, I don't get the alert. I only get the alert for the things that I say that I do. And it happens in real time. So it literally, like, the connection and the magic happens in real time. And so we launched the RAN for real in September of 2016. And it is just, you know, gone on. It's getting ready to be in its third version. So RAN 3.0 is getting ready. And it's really magic. It really is. I mean, I know it's more than magic, but what it's been able to accomplish has just turned, you know, how we do things, how we connect, how we communicate.
So early on, how did you know who should have access to it? How did you determine who was going to interact with the RAN that had contact with these students?
Well, so when we're listening to, you know, so you have a youth who has a need, but then you have this network of providers, and one of the concerns from the providers is, you know, you're asking us to give you basically a cell phone number and an email of somebody in my agency. It's like one person or maybe two people. And so there was concern about youth having direct access to, right? There was from the provider's end. And so what we did was we trained as many people as we could think of that we knew that were adults, you know, working in schools or working in systems that were already interacting with these youth. And so like in a school setting, it could be a teacher, a counselor, a librarian, a football coach, the homeless liaisons for the school districts. But on the outside, we trained, we trained school resource officers, librarians at the Eugene Public Library. We trained parks and rec people from the city. We trained service providers, that were working with this population. So we continue to add people to be able to send alerts, but that's how we resolve this issue or this uneasiness right. that a network of adults was feeling was right. there's kind of an in-between person.
Right. And so you're looking at it from school buildings, the library, various places where kids hang out mm-hmm. On a daily basis, hopefully at school. Mm-hmm. And that's something that occurred to me is that I had a preconceived notion that if I was homeless as a student, that I would actually not go to school. But one of the things that is not the case is that's not the case. Students do want to go to school. They do, no matter what their situation, that is their social safety net, right? That is their And so it seems like schools would be a logical place to identify and connect kids with resources, right?
Well, when I talk about the kids that are, standing on the edge, mm-hmm. well, how do you find those kids? Well, how we find those kids is that the schools are required to identify their students who are experiencing homelessness, K-12, right? Mm-hmm. So there's this subpopulation of that group that are identified by the schools as unaccompanied, meaning they're still in school, mm-hmm. but they're navigating school life and homelessness without their parent or guardian.
Hmm. Like, why would that happen? Why?
Yeah, between the three school districts in our community, 4J, Bethel, and Springfield, there's about 500.
Really?
Identified unaccompanied students
in a small community like this.
Yes.
Wow.
So the focus is on those students who the schools have identified. How do we support them as a community, as schools, as a network of providers to stay engaged in school and off the street?
Right. So it's been going for about 6 years now. You've helped hundreds, it sounds like, of students. And you have expanded, 15th Night has expanded to, it's at most of the area high schools, right?
So when we talked about the RAN,
right,
the Rapid Access Network Technology, right. That's what I would say, community-based, we realized that if we needed to get closer to the students in need, that we needed to get into their school buildings. And so we started taking the RAN into our local high schools. Hmm. And so there's kind of an eccentric circle that happens is that now local high schools have their own RAN. Hmm. So they're connecting their own students to resources and services that are already available in their building.
Okay.
And if they don't have that resource or service in their building, then they're able to send out the alert into the big community RAN. So right now the work is really getting the school-based RANs set up, mm-hmm. and that takes time. And it's not the technology that I tell people, if you can use your ATM, if people even use those anymore, I don't know. But if you use your ATM, you can use the RAN. I am not a tech person. I can use the RAN. It is simple. It's slick. The people that, the team that developed that is amazing. Mm-hmm. That's not the hard part. The hard part is identifying what are the resources and services inside the school building. Mm-hmm. Because ironically, there is not one person, not one, inside of a school building that knows all of the resources and services. So that's what takes long. But mm-hmm. yeah, we are in several of our local high schools right now and are continuing to expand to the ones that we're not in yet.
Right. And the work that you do, obviously, as a community coordinator is for the wider community of folks who are using the RAN, it's about making sure that those resources are available, right? A lot of the work that you do, can you talk a little bit about how you connect with these different resources and involve them in this project?
Well, this project wouldn't work, would not be successful without our network of provider organizations and agencies. If we don't have anyone that we can send an alert to, then it doesn't work, right? And so I spend, you know, they are a valuable and critical piece to the solution. So I spend a lot of time really understanding what their organization is doing, the types of programming that they're providing or resources that they're providing to this population, and what they need to do that. And are there barriers to doing that? So really working with them to make sure that they have what they need to continue to participate in this network and provide those resources and services. So I do that individually with the network. But actually the Youth Action Council also provides like consultation.
Right.
To our network of providers when they're trying to grapple with something related to youth. But the other thing the 15th Night does is look at kind of on a bigger scale, what are the gaps or barriers to resources and services? Just because you can connect to them doesn't mean that we have enough of them. And it also doesn't mean like that the system is really set up, you know, to work efficiently, mm-hmm. Meaning, you know, like the pathway to getting a job. Do we have resources to do that? Yes, but we didn't have enough resources or the right resources in the right sequence mm-hmm. to really help give these students the best opportunity to be successful in employment. Hmm. And so last year, the 15th Night worked with our community and providers and youth to create what we call the Youth Employment Pathway. Hmm. Identified the barriers, addressed the barriers, and then found, we pulled together certain providers and said, if you guys worked collaboratively and you were a team, you could actually provide this pathway together. And so for our community, that connection is, or that group is Connected Lane County, Deb Northwest, Goodwill Industries, and Looking Glass Community Services. And so that launched the year that we're in, this mm-hmm. school year.
So that's okay. So you're talking about, okay, yeah, it's not just about connecting up resources with students in need. It's about listening to the students about what they need and then identifying if there are gaps in the network of services that are out there and then helping to kind of like try to put things together to make that happen. One of the things that I just recently heard about was something that 15th Night is working on with a couple other organizations here in town that is in support of students who are displaced because of the COVID situation and struggling to keep their connectivity and their internet and places to work and places to sleep and all that stuff. Can you talk a little bit about the work that you've been doing recently with the Eugene Education Foundation and all that?
Yeah. So we learned early on, you know, when COVID first hit back, you know, March of 2000, you know, of this year, 2020.
Seems like just yesterday, doesn't it?
Those students that, you know, I mentioned, you know, that we have identified as unaccompanied because they're not coming back into the school buildings, they really fell off the radar screen. And what we saw was, so many of these students couch surf, meaning I'm going to stay with this friend tonight or this week, and then that's not going to work out. So then I'm going to go stay with my grandma, and then that's not going to work out. So I'm going to go stay with this random person who said that he'd let me sleep on his couch. You know, so it's called couch surfing. Mm-hmm. It's very dangerous and it's very stressful and unreliable because you just literally don't know if when you get home from school, if you actually have a place to stay. Well, so what happened at the beginning of COVID is where these students were couch surfing, they'd either say, you can't stay here, you need to get out because we have this horrible virus happening and we're afraid, mm-hmm. so you need to leave. Or if you don't stay sheltered in place in this location, you have to leave. And those of us who have teenagers know how hard it was to get our teenagers to stay, to shelter in place at the beginning of COVID. Well, you can imagine how, what happened when somebody said, you have to shelter in place, and if you don't, you have to leave. So there was a lot of students who ended up literally on the street for the very first time, knowing nothing about anything about the street. Like, hey, you have to carry everything you own on your back. Never leave it. Never put it down. Never leave it. It will get stolen. And there are some super dangerous places you don't even want to go near. And where do you get food? And so you had this flood of students that had never been on the street that were on the street. And so, you know, our local providers had to scramble to try and put something together. And from that, we learned that one of the gaps in our community is that there is no, you know, like centralized location for students to come to access resources, services, programming, employment, training, et cetera. And so 15th Night has been working with an organization called Youth Era, which is a national organization that's based here in Eugene. And we have asked them, basically we're helping facilitate the development of like a drop-in, a resource center for students. And they just signed a lease on a building at 44 West 7th in Eugene and are working with the schools to try and get that part of that building open so that students can come in and get support for distance learning, have Wi-Fi access. Thank you, Eugene, for your high-speed internet.
Yes.
And so they're trying to get that the part of the building open so that students can have access to that, but also have access to food, mental health services, and even possibly like a school nurse to show up and help out with those types of things. So yeah, when you talk about the Eugene Education Fund and 4J and different businesses.
When did you say that was going to open up?
That's what's happening.
When did you say that was going to open up?
Well, I thought it was going to open up on Monday. So it'll be open maybe tomorrow. Like we're just waiting for the school districts have to, they have like COVID safety coordinators.
Right.
Right. And so we're really trying to work through how to keep this building as safe as possible for not only the students, but any of the staff that are going to be in that building. And so we're really super close.
Who's going to staff that location during the day and in the evenings?
Well, Youth Era will be there.
Okay.
And then I think some specially trained school staff, they have to have special COVID training, that they'll be coming in to help students.
Okay, great.
As well.
Wow. Well, that right there, that's a huge project in itself. I mean, if you came to me and said, hey, we're going to do this thing, we're going to start this, drop-in, youth center type thing downtown, I'd be like, okay, well, there's the rest of your life, but you're doing that and the RAN aspect of 15th Night and coordinating all of these different resources locally. Are you just in Eugene, Springfield / Bethel?
Yes.
And are there other communities that you're planning on expanding to?
Well, we do have, before COVID, other communities would hear about what we're doing and they would say, how do we get 15th Night here? And we would be like, we're so busy doing the work here that we don't really know how to help you do it.
We're working in it, not on it.
But like just today, I was on a Zoom call with somebody from Clackamas County, so Oregon City area. Mm-hmm. And they were asking me about 15th Night and they said the same thing. How can we get this here? Mm-hmm. And so...
Yeah, well,
they're working on that.
Sounds like something that needs to happen. Everything takes time, though. So can you talk a little bit about what you think 15th Night is going to be able to do as far as sustaining itself? Can you talk a little bit about the interest in it and the interest that our community partners here in Eugene and Springfield and locally have committed to solving and or working on this extremely difficult problem?
Yes. So that yes team or that core team that I mentioned early, we were like, fairly quickly or early on in the conversation, we're like, How do we sustain this? How do we create a community effort and then sustain it? Like, how does it live on its own, basically? How would it live on its own? Mm. And our strategy around that was to create community around school catchment areas. So take the 15th Night model, which includes a youth action council, and it includes all these partners and the RAN, scale it down to a high school catchment area. So like it's South Eugene High School and everything around it.
Right.
Right. And that if you had parents and students and community members and businesses and faith organizations that were around that school that were participating in this work, mm-hmm. that it would live on beyond this, the 15th Night's yes team or myself, that it would live on in that catchment area.
Okay.
So that's really the strategy is not that the 15th Night is doing all this work. The 15th Night is empowering communities around schools to do the work.
Okay. And that's a great distinction that needs, it's important to look at that it's not the solution in and of itself without all of the other things that have to go with it. And all the other things that have to go with it, in a way, it need the 15th Night in order to make them work more effectively, right? And well, for this particular problem. So, Megan, what is, for all the HugeCast listeners out there, what can they do to get involved or support 15th Night in any way? Is there anything that you can recommend they look into or?
Absolutely. I mean, we've been saying all along that this is a community effort, and we talked a lot about the youth, and we've talked a lot about the network of service providers and organizations, but what we haven't talked about is community, you know, like your listeners, our neighbors, you know, et cetera. So there is a critical role that we've developed for community, and that's called a community responder. So you can be a volunteer that is part of the RAN, and you would receive alerts for things that the network couldn't provide. So for example, a lot of times that's like clothing, a specific thing, like size 13 and a half shoes, you know, a rain jacket of this size, a bike tire, a bike lock. I mean, it's all kinds of things that the network itself just doesn't have. And so when that happens, we're able, 15th Night can send out an alert to our community responders and say, hey, we have a 15-year-old boy who needs a bike lock delivered to North Eugene High School by Friday. And the beauty of it is there's no paperwork to fill out. I don't have to background check you because you're not going to ever see the kid, the student, right? You're just going to buy the bike lock and you're going to drop it off at North Eugene High School.
That's it.
And it's going to get to the student. So you get this text message and email alert the same as everyone else gets. And if you can't do it, you just ignore it. You don't have to do anything. You just ignore it.
You don't have to respond unless you can help.
You just, if you can't do it, you don't respond. If you can, you respond.
Do you ever, have any fights or anything like that between, you know, folks where they're like, no, I got this one.
And yeah. I mean, you got the last have heard, you know, people, cause it happened. The responses are really quick.
Right.
They happen quick. And so people say, I can never respond fast enough. And what I like to say is there will be alerts where we need multiple things. Like we need 10 packages of socks. You know, we need something that's a multiple of.
Right.
And that any we need as many as people want to give us. So there's always opportunity if you can't get to that single thing we needed, you'll be, you know, asked to help when we need multiple things.
Great. So, hey, listen, while we're live here, well, we're not live, while we're on the line here, where can people go online to find out more about 15th Night and the work that you're doing?
Well, we have a really cool Instagram page.
Oh, really?
You can follow us on Instagram at 15th Night.
Okay.
Like 15th Night.
Okay. 15th Night.
Yeah. 15th Night. So we have a really cool Instagram page that's pretty active. And you can also go on our website, 15thnight.org, and you find out all kinds of things about 15th Night, but you can also sign up to be a community responder. You can make online donations to support this work. So either of those two places are a great way to connect with us.
Okay. And for our listeners, in the show notes for this podcast, we will make sure we put links and all kinds of other stuff in there that if you want to follow up and find out more about 15th Night, that'll be the way to do it. Megan, thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you. Always good to talk to you, Adam.
And now for some housekeeping. HugeCast would like to thank its contributors, volunteers, and sponsors. A huge thanks goes out to Mark Davis at Eugene Tech for providing guidance and enthusiasm, to Trifoya for providing equipment, space, beverages, and the occasional pizza, and to That Supergirl for providing web hosting. Our producer is Kimberly Noel. Music and soundscapes conceived by Mike Jones. Audio editors include Mike Jones and Christopher Mitchell. Audio engineer is Christopher Mitchell. HugeCast hosts are the amazing Adam Wendt and the delightful JoJo Jensen. If you like what you hear, please give us a review. 5 stars would be nice. And who knows, we might even read your comments during the show. So thanks for listening, or sleeping through it. Either way, thanks.